Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Farm Credit Illinois joins in celebrating the rich history of Illinois agriculture.
Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report for the 26th day of May, 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. And a bit later in the program, Matt Bennett will be here to take a look at the cash grain market and the situation on the ground in East Central Illinois. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast. To that with Mike Tenor of T-Storm Weather in Chicago. In fact, we'll bring him into our conversation a bit early today to take up some things that have been happening in Brazil as they get ready to harvest their second crop. Corn. Oh, and one other item, we'll take up the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the TTIP trade deals all during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers now as they finished up in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon. Futures in the corn pit were up 3.5 cents in the nearby July at 408.25. September at 410.5, 3.25 higher. And December at 409.75, up 1.25. March corn up 1.25 at 416.5. And May of next year at 419.75, up 2 cents for the day. Soy complex, July contract, it's $10.79.75. In the bean pit, down 5.75. August off 4.5 at 10.77.25. September, $10.61.75, down 3.75. And November beans, 3.75 lower at $10.50.5. January at 10.47 even, down 1.75. Soybean oil at 31.04, that's down 30 cents. Bean meal at 409.60, up $2.40. Wheat futures, where most of the action happened for the day. Rainfall out west and thoughts about disease problems. July contract at 481.25, up 15.25, and the soft red, that of course here in the eastern corn belt, and then the hard red out west at 462.25, up 11.25 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago, nearby June contract $118.77.5, up 62.5 cents. August at 115.17.5, $1.77.5 cents higher. May feeder cattle up 45 cents at $145.92.5, and the August at $145.22.5, up $2.55. June lean hogs today $80.60, 42.5 cents higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Here's how the energies are trading for the afternoon. Crude oil at $49.28 a barrel, down 28 cents. The August contract at $49.69, down 27. Both of those contracts have been to a high above $50 for the day. Ethanol futures, the June contract at $1.64.3, a tenth of a cent higher. And the gasoline, or the wholesale price, RBOB, at $1.61.7 per gallon, down 2.4 cents. Diesel fuel or heating oil at $1.49.6 lower. Natural gas at $1.92.1, down 0.7 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 17,804. It's down 13 points. The U.S. dollar is down 0.19 at 95.15. And the gold futures on the day at $1,220.10 for a troy ounce, down $3.70. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area tonight. As it comes from the National Weather Service, a 40% chance of showers, some thunderstorms after 9 o'clock this evening. Mostly cloudy, a low of 68 degrees. Tomorrow, 50% chance of rainfall, mostly cloudy, and a high of 83. Friday night, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms continues, mostly cloudy, a low of 66. And on Saturday, again, a 50% chance of rainfall, mostly cloudy, and 81. Saturday evening, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, and 64 degrees. And on Sunday, that 30% continues, although will turn partly sunny during the day with a high of 82 degrees. More on the weather in a moment.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We'll be joined in a moment by Dan Zwicker, Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. However, I wanted to bring just one soundbite to you from Mike Tanura, who I talked to earlier in the day, and we'll hear a bit later a weather forecast from for the United States. I did ask him about the second crop, Safrinha corn, in Brazil and what his assessment of that crop might be. It suffered through some really dry conditions, and starting next week, they should begin their harvest there.
Well, that's a great question, and it's always difficult to say, but the only thing we know for sure is that it rained minimally across about 25% of their winter corn belt. This includes all of Goiás, the eastern third to half of Mato Grosso, and then surrounding areas of Minas Gerais and Bahia. That's a lot of corn that didn't see very much in the way of rainfall since about the end of March. So that's your problem area. You could easily argue that a problem area also surrounds this region, with corn being grown further to the west and south. And the reason we say that is because from late March through the end of April, it basically was hot and dry. So it was kind of the equivalent of having a wet spring, then a hot midsummer, and then it stayed hot in the north all the way until harvest season, so that's never good. But in these other areas where it's a little bit trickier to assess, they received some pretty big rains across the southern third or so of corn production, starting in the end of April and then lasting until basically a week ago. Some areas had over 10 inches of rain compared to normal rainfall of 4 inches. That's probably going to be what decides how big this corn crop or how small it is. Did that rain make a big difference once it began in the end of April in these areas that were kind of always on the edge of having a problem? We know there was a problem to the north. We know there probably was some problems in these other areas. But if the south part of Brazil, which is where most of this rain occurred, ended up having significant benefit from that, well, that might make the situation not as bad as it otherwise be. But if the heat and the dryness was problematic enough in April to cause significant yield damage and the rain arrived too late, well, then that, you know, won't be a good situation. But either way, we know there's crop losses there. It's just a matter of how big was it.
And we'll find out more about how big those crop losses, as Mike Tanura just told us, probably starting next week as they begin to harvest corn in Brazil. To talk about this and what's been happening in Chicago, Dan Zwicker now joins us from Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Thanks so much, Dan, for being with us and for waiting patiently.
Very well, Todd. Missed you last week, so glad to be back on the air.
Yeah, I had a couple of days that I needed to take off last week, and glad to be back on the air this week. How technically are we set up, and do the technicals tell us anything about the fundamental picture that we're hearing about out of Brazil?
Well, I think it fits into maybe what's happening here this week. The way corn did close here today on the lead futures, which is July contract, is 408 and a quarter, which we clearly broke above that 399 and three quarter high that was made early October. So we're kind of in a breakout point of this 50 to 55 cent trading range that we've been in basically since we made our lows in early August, which was around 345, 346 area. So I think if the yields start coming in on the low side next week, then that would give at least fundamental confirmation of what the technical picture looks like is telling us here if we're able to maintain these gains into Friday close.
And if you look a little farther out, do you have some upside objectives that go along with this technical picture? Do we need to be worried about that yet?
Well, I think the first target, of course, would be last year's high, which we had at 338 and three quarters. But as a rule of thumb, when you break out of a sideways trading range like we've been in, which is, I would call it about a 54-cent trading range or 55-cent trading range, you would actually just double that. So you would add 55 cents onto this 399 and three quarters. So then it would argue that there's a move toward 450 in play. I mean, that's the way a technician would play for it. The first line of resistance or point would be the 339 and three quarters. And, of course, if we would punch through that, that would probably give us enough new technical buying to push us right on into the 450 area. Now, a couple things, retracement levels, 442 and a quarter is the first Fibonacci retracement level going back to the all-time high that we posted back in 12. And that's at 442 and a quarter. The 38% retracement level is up there a ways. It doesn't look like that's in play yet, but 519 would be the place to kind of look at. But I think initially what we would look for, if the yields do, we start hearing less than expected yield numbers coming out of Brazil, that would probably fuel this market on up to last year's high of 438 and three quarters. We punch that out, and then the objective of breaking out of the 55-cent trading range, which would probably be like 455, would be the, you know, if you'd want to get down to the pennies. But I would say the 450 area is probably what the target would be, at least initially, Todd.
Was the rainfall in the West the reason that wheat futures were driven higher today, and is that supportive of the corn market?
Well, I imagine quality concerns are going to be a worry in the wheat market with the rains that we're having in the Western Corn Belt. It also may indicate, too, that yields are not going to maybe be as high as what everybody's got plugged in, or it could indicate some new buying somewhere along the line. But I do know that the technical picture of wheat isn't all that bad, given all of the bearishness that we've kind of thrown at the wheat market for the last several years, even this year with, you know, a billion bushel carryout type. So there is, I would say that helps it. It also, the dollar does look like it's kind of finished its corrective bounce over a long-term downtrend. We'll have to see whether or not the downside follow-through that we saw here today is extended into next week. But if the dollar is now ready for to resume its trend lower, then that would give us more fundamental ammunition to drive commodity prices higher next week.
Can soybeans continue to move higher, or have they run through most of what they will do over the near term?
Well, it's kind of hard to say, because I'm sure that this rally in beans and some of the planting delays that we've experienced in some of the areas of the Corn Belt would indicate that we've probably added a few additional acres of soybeans. The problem is that we're not going to have any verification of that until we get into that June 30th stocks and acres report. So that's a full month down the road. Now, there will be private surveys and there will be private estimates. But unless the soybeans, unless we find 3 million acres or so, we need to get that planted bean number up to around 85, 84 and a half or so. Otherwise, I think with the shortness in the South America soybean crop and the demand that we're looking at for the coming year, in these stocks levels could very well slip below 200 million. Now, USDA on their last report, I think, sitting at around 300, but that is not attainable if we only plant 82 million acres. So in order to get 300 million bushel carryout, we're going to have to find another 3 million acres, which is that 100 to 120 million bushels, and that would give us our 300. Without that, then a year from now, ending stocks look like they could slip under 200 million. And then, of course, the worryness over the switch from La Nina to El Nino, or El Nino to La Nina, and adverse weather in South America could just add more fuel to the fire. So, no, I don't think the bean market is necessarily over with. I don't think you can be able to confirm that until we see what kind of actual acreage numbers we actually have. I think for the time being, though, we're probably at a point that we could consolidate some of the strong advances that we've had. But today's nickel loss in the old crop and 3-4 cents in the new crop is no big deal, especially given the kind of week that we've had. Tomorrow is going to be key. If we can finish out the week on a higher note, that really sets up the technical picture for both corn and soybeans for another leg up as we go on into June. But now, when I say that, and this is what my argument was last winter and spring, is that statistically, the odds were that corn and soybean prices would make higher highs as we go through the growing season. But once we get into June, then those odds now begin to tilt. By the end of June, you will have probably about a 70% probability that the high prices for the year is in place. So while, you know, it does look like technically we could have another leg up in this market, it would be a leg up from a seasonal perspective and statistical point of view that it would be selling opportunities. And I kind of want to leave it as that. We'll have to kind of take 1 week at a time. You get a lot of June, July highs made in corn and soybeans, and they're usually made between the 15th of June and the 15th of July. And, of course, the weather pattern and that June report is going to have a lot to say whether or not the highs come before the June report or after the June report.
Well, we'll check back with you periodically. Hey, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Todd.
Yep, bye-bye. That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, we'll look into the eastern Corn Belt and start with some basic agronomy, as Ohio and Indiana, parts of Illinois, remain well behind normal in their planting season, especially for soybeans. As of last Sunday, Ohio, in fact, was just 22% planted for soybeans. The normal five-year rolling average there is 46%. Laura Lindsay is a soybean and small grains specialist with Ohio State Extension. She says management recommendations don't really change for growers who get their plants in before June, but those planting into June should increase their seeding rates or even adjust their relative maturity. For soybeans planted during the first half of June, the Ohio State Extension Office says rates of 200,000 to 225,000 seeds per acre is recommended. When looking at relative maturity, a four-day delay in planting delays physiological maturity about one full day during the first half of June. Row spacing is also a consideration, says Lindsay. While growers should plant soybeans in narrow rows between 7.5 and 15 inches, it's even more important to adhere to narrow rows when planting in June. This is so the crops have adequate time for canopy closure, which increases light interception, improves weed control by shading out weeds, and helps retain soil moisture. Let's stay with soybean production areas, but move from North America to South America. The changing administration in Brazil is a bit more liberal on foreign investment in land ownership. It appears that the new administration will lift some of the restrictions on foreign ownership of agricultural land. Well, let's stay international, but move into trade deals, a couple of them, in fact. We'll start with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Ag leaders have been telling Congress they want the deal, and they want it now. The only way out, they say, of the low commodity prices that's currently affecting the farm economy is to increase demand and not pile on more regulations like the Waters of the U.S. rule or GPSA, which is a livestock marketing change. North Carolina producer Dave Herring spoke at a hearing on behalf of the National Pork Producers Council. He argues that the USA cannot afford to let other countries reap all the benefits from trade deals.
Because of other Asia-Pacific trade agreements are being negotiated without the United States can't afford either economically or geopolitically to walk away from the fastest growing region in the world. And to give you an idea of the importance of free trade agreements to the U.S. pork producers, the United States now exports more pork to 20 countries with which it has FTAs than to the rest of the whole world.
Kansas cattle producer Tracy Bruner spoke for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association on the dangers of walking away from the TPP.
We have capitalized on the growing demand for U.S. beef overseas, and Japan has become our leading export market. But Australia now has a 10% tariff advantage over us, resulting in a $300 million loss to our industry. The tariff advantage for Australia will continue to grow until we pass TPP.
But whether that happens in a lame duck Congress, the next administration, or not at all, will likely depend on the November elections and who controls Congress and the White House in January. And that's a look at the agricultural news. Matt Bennett now joins us. He's from Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, out of Windsor, Illinois, to talk about the situation on the ground in East Central Illinois and across the Midwest. Hey, Matt, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks, Tom.
Well, tell me a little bit about what you thought about the rallies this week in the corn and the soybeans.
Well, definitely yesterday, the soybean rally is pretty much heavily attributed to the soybean meal situation, which, you know, I don't think that that's anything that we haven't known for a fair amount of time. And so I was surprised at the ferociousness of the rally on the one hand, but then on the other hand, not so surprised because we've seen soybeans rally significantly this spring whenever nobody really thought they could. So looking at the corn rally, I feel like that there's a fair amount of reason for it. We've seen export sales awfully good, you know, so far in the last several weeks. We've seen, you know, ethanol demand stay very consistently above what's needed to meet the USDA goal. So I guess I'm buying into that rally a little bit more than the long-term aspects of the soybean rally.
And does this change your thoughts on what farmers ought to be doing?
Well, I think we're getting into a point right now where more farmers are able to etch out a profit at these corn, you know, in that almost 410 level. And so I think that they probably ought to step in and do something. You know, as you know, I've been a huge advocate of selling beans for quite some time, and I still am. I think anytime you're this high over the insurance price, you should be selling.
And for corn, we're still waiting, I take it.
Well, I think so, but the first increment of sales, a lot of my guys have been doing that this week. It all depends on the individual producer and where their break-even price levels are. I've been patient so far, and I still remain fairly patient, but I don't have a problem with selling 10% in this area.
Is it good news that we're rallying this early in the season?
Well, you know, yes and no. I think that the timing of the rally is kind of surprising on the one hand, but on the other hand, it shows us that to me, I don't think this has a whole lot to do with weather, maybe a little bit, but I think it's got a lot more to do with demand being significantly better than what we thought it was going to be. And so that's good news, because if we do end up getting some sort of a weather rally this summer, I think it could definitely be one that, you know, that we're pretty happy with.
But right now we're still looking at really large supplies under normal crop conditions. Is that still the case?
Yes, I believe so. But, you know, you talk to a lot of meteorologists and they don't feel like we're going to be set up weather-wise to have a trend line yield this year. So if we do not and we drop acreage, as I think we will, I think that it tightens up the situation a little bit. But I still feel like we have ample supplies. So I definitely want to know my break-even price levels, market according to those, because I don't think we can go wrong there. I don't know what the market's going to do more than anybody else does, but we got to market for profit.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He's with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, out of Windsor, Illinois. When we come back, we'll talk about the weather forecast with Drew Lerner.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
It's National Blueberry Cheesecake Day. Perhaps the first written cheesecake recipe goes back to the first century AD, when Marcus Cato, a Roman politician, wrote an essay on agriculture called De Agricultura. In it, he describes a recipe for a small sweet cake, often given as a temple offering, that contained 2 pounds of cheese well crushed in a mortar. By the way, cream cheese was invented in 1872 by William Lawrence. He distributed cream cheese in foil wrappers from 1880 under the name of the Empire Company. you may know it better as Philadelphia brand cream cheese. On this day in agricultural history in 1862, Isaac Babbitt died. An American inventor, Babbitt created an alloy widely used for friction-reducing bearings. In 1908, the first major Middle East oil strike was made. A gusher of petroleum rose 50 feet above the top of the drilling rig and smothered the drillers. And in 1999, Waldo Lansbury Seaman died. Seaman was an American inventor who is credited with the invention of vinyl. PVC is found in hundreds of products, including garden hoses and imitation leather. By the way, vinyl is the second most used plastic in the world. Seaman held over 100 patents, and his technical expertise led to his discovery of three other major new polymer families, including synthetic natural rubber and oil-resistant synthetic rubber. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. We're joined now by T-Storm Weather's Mike Tenora from Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. Let's start with the weather here in the United States. I'm understanding that it's a pretty complicated mess.
That would be a great way to describe it. I would argue that it's one of the most complex patterns we've seen in recent memory. And it's not so complicated in that we don't understand what's going on. We do understand what's going on, but it's these little tiny small-scale features that really drive rainfall and thunderstorm activity throughout the Corn Belt that are really hard to figure out. So pretty much what's happening is we have a warm and tropical air mass in place. We all know that because we can step outside and feel it. Well, going on above us, we have a number of waves of energy and storm systems that are moving from west to east. So far, everything sounds pretty normal, and that typically would lead to thunderstorms. Well, it is going to lead to thunderstorms, but the reason the forecast is so difficult is because there's little small-scale systems within each large-scale system, and those smaller ones are the ones that really drive rainfall. Computer models were essentially made to analyze the big picture and then develop output that shows us where it may or may not rain, but they were never really designed to handle all these little tiny small systems. Well, there's a lot of them across the U.S. right now. We can count one in Indiana, one in Missouri, one in Nebraska, one in Texas. That's just looking at the weather map early this afternoon. And this type of pattern is going to last for about 7 to 10 more days. So in the end, what ends up happening is everybody sees rain. We'll see widespread coverage of above normal rainfall with at least 1 inch for all corn and soybean areas. That's the simple part of the forecast. The tricky part is who receives more. At this point, it looks like the western half of the Corn Belt and the eastern half of the plains will see the most rain. That will be along and west of the Mississippi River. And that's just because of all these systems that kick out into the Midwest. They all will, at some point or another, have to move across the plains and have to move into the western Corn Belt. So just from a probability standpoint, you have to put the heaviest rainfall there. And right now, we're going to see a pretty interesting setup here later on this afternoon and more so tonight. We should see one of the bigger systems move out of the Rockies and into the plains. That should cause widespread thunderstorm development to develop across the plains and then extend into the Corn Belt. So most corn and soybeans in Nebraska, Kansas, and points on to the east into Iowa and Missouri will see a pretty big rain once again tonight. Those may well extend into Illinois by tomorrow morning. But all in all, Todd, I mean, the big point here is that there's a lot of rain coming up. It won't rain everywhere every single day. And it's going to be really tricky to tell you exactly when or how it's going to rain more than 6 to 12 hours in advance. You just have to take it as it comes and tune into your weather forecast. I mean, this is a good example of why traders subscribe to a service like T-Storm. Basically, that's what we're doing. We're trying to figure it out as quickly as we can and tell people as soon as we know. There's sometimes a little bit of a lag, between broadcast media or the internet and this type of weather pattern, and trying to figure out how it relates to corn and soybeans.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, you're welcome, Todd. Have a great day and always good talking to you.
Mike Tenura is with T-Storm Weather. He's out of Chicago, Illinois, and joins us on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.